Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here we go.
Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love.
This is another Dolphins podcast.
Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh House.
Introducing the 2024 NFL Draft Week Spooktacular. Welcome into another edition of another Dolphins podcast. We are less than 1 week away from the NFL Draft. We have Cat, we have Houts. Boys, most mock drafters are saying that the NFL Draft might start with six straight offensive players. Something we don't see often, but something we didn't see back in 2021. Cat, let's start with you. Right at the top of the board, if it's offensive players one by one off the board, is that a good or a bad thing for the Dolphins?
It really depends because, when you look at the totality of the first round, Dane Brugler was talking about this, that I don't think any more than it was either 19 or 21 offensive players have been drafted in the first round. No more than 21 offensive players, I believe, have been drafted in the first round ever. And it should exceed that this year. But, it's not a very heavy draft as far as defensive players at the top. So, it's just going to be a different type of draft.
Yeah. And you asked if that's a good thing. I'm just sitting here, and again, I haven't done a lot. I've done one mock draft, as we'll talk about, but that's what, in my opinion, probably four, you're going to get the four quarterbacks, right? Then probably Marvin Harrison. And then, Joe Alt or another wide receiver, perhaps. So I think that'd be in the Dolphins' best interest. At that point, then I guess we see the way the board falls. But I could definitely see those first four picks at least being quarterbacks, because in today's NFL, you're nothing if you don't have a young quarterback.
Cat, is this going to be your third? Well, we've each done one mock draft. Cat, have you only done one mock draft so far this year?
I've done a mock draft in my head for the entire NFL. For the Dolphins, this is going to be my first mock draft. I'm not a huge mock draft type of guy, but I think it's a good brain exercise. So I am really looking forward to it. But as far as the draft in general, as far as watching every pick come off the board, this will be my 27th year doing that. So I'm looking forward to just the entire draft weekend, even with two kids under four at home, which I'm sure Josh can relate to.
It's not the same that there's no McShay. I think that there's a little magic lost in the draft community that we don't have him out there yelling with Mel Kiper. That's something that I always have appreciated. I think that's going to be the funnest part of this whole exercise. Josh mentioned it. I mentioned it. We've only done one mock draft, so we couldn't really prepare for the situations we would find ourselves in. So what we're going to do is we're going to go round by round here and look at what the possibilities are for the Miami Dolphins, who we selected, and where it kind of puts the team moving forward. So guys, starting in the first round, pick 21, actually before that, just to reel it back, we did use the Pro Football Focus mock draft simulator, and our biggest rule, we had the sliders slid a little bit, I guess I should say, but we could only make one trade. Josh, I don't think either of us made a trade in our mock drafts. I kind of wish I did, looking back at it. So let's jump right in. I'll just jump in first with my guy. At pick 21, it was kind of unique to see Latu on the board. Mims was on the board. Fatanu went 17. Brian Thomas, someone who it doesn't fit with the Dolphins, but he's someone I cannot wait to watch in the NFL. He went 20. At 21, Cooper DeJean was on the board. That is who I went with. Just, it's so hard to look at this Miami Dolphins team and not see Chris Greer just saying, we're going to take the best player available. That is kind of the mindset I had there. When you see someone like DeJean who, kind of get caught up in the rankings, but you're sitting there at pick 21 and you see him as a top 10 player in what, 90% of big boards, you start to wonder, like, this is a Are the stars aligning for the Dolphins to get that help in the secondary, specifically at safety with DeJean? I think we kind of have, or at least I have a few concerns about the amount of depth the Miami Dolphins safety group has. I think this would be the flexibility the team needs, and you can get a blue chip piece at the position. So that's where I started my draft. What about you, Cap?
Yeah, and when you look at the PFF simulator here, it makes it very realistic as far as when you take the tab down to the consensus board, you know, where it's not PFF's opinion. It's where kind of the rest of the world is figuring these guys to go. So it's a very realistic board. And so Cooper DeJean and Leiatu Latu were on the board for me as well, had a couple of trade down offers. My pick ended up being Amarius Mims from Georgia. Mm-hmm. And this is a player I'm willing to take the risk with and stand on the table with here, because, you know, look, he's an interesting guy because he only played 8 games at Georgia. But physically, you're talking about somebody who was a 5-star recruit, a top 15 recruit back in 2021. And when he was on the field in those 8 games, he did incredible things. I would even take it a step further and say, if he had played 15 college games instead of 8, he would be a top 10 lock. That's mm-hmm. how much I think of him. And he also, too, for somebody who's almost 6'8", everyone who's 6'8" has the same criticism against him, that they're not able to get low enough. They're, you know, they have awkwardness to their motion. That's not the case with Amarius Mims. So I feel like if the Dolphins made him their first round pick, that he can start out a guard and then move to tackle like Laremy Tunsil did. So to me, this is a premier prospect and a premier athlete where if a couple of things fell a different way for him this past year, the Dolphins would not have been able to get him. So I'm very happy to get him here at pick 21, and I wasn't willing to trade down.
Yeah, and Mims is a guy who, I mean, I'm going to be honest, you got us pretty hyped up on in our when we were going over the offensive tackles. And then that same week, you go on Twitter, you refresh, and now everyone's talking about Amarius Mims. So shout out to you, Kat, because I mean, I was hoping he was there. I think in my draft, he got sniped. I believe it was either Los Angeles or the Pittsburgh Steelers. But, I mean, the Dolphins, as Jake and I will attest to, I mean, if you don't get an offensive line in round one, I mean, then in round two, you're in no man's land. So I did not have an option to get Mims. I did have an opportunity to get Coop, but I saw Jake post it, so I was going to go a little bit different, right? So I thought maybe I'd go a little bit different. You both mentioned a guy, and maybe it's just because I'm starting to watch a film now and I was recency biased, but Leiatu Latu, the pass rush from UCLA, I mean, I joke, but it does look like it's just Jalen Phillips out there, right? He has maybe better hands than Jalen Phillips coming out, but I think Jalen Phillips, I think the world of him, right? He's one of the best pass rushers in football, but the fact that this dude looks like he's cloned to him, you know, has an array of pass rush moves, can do a little bit of everything, and I always go back to, you know, I think it was Mike McDaniel said his favorite position to scout was the pass rushers. You know, we're sitting here, I think our pod, we talked about Bradley Chubb's, you know, uncertainty after, you know, maybe there's an outs at some point down the road. I've seen other people discuss that. You know, you need pass rushers. So for me, I think that might have been my best player on the board. Again, recency bias up the butt because I just started these pass rushers and I'll eventually get into some other guys. But I just couldn't stop thinking about Jalen Phillips, and that's one of my favorite players in football. So 23 and a half sacks over the last 2 seasons. Like Phillips almost retired, what, back in 2021. But this was the best player that was there. And again, I'm not sure I love this draft I did, but I just cannot pass on Latu. I mean, he was there and I just had to run to the podium with that pick.
God, I so understand your reasoning, and I was looking right at him and oh, that would be such a good pick. That'd be such an exciting pick because it's one of the players that you're going to be watching every single down of training camp. You are praying that Barry Jackson doesn't tweet he gets steamrolled by Austin Jackson, those type of things. That would be such a fun camp battle to watch, I should say. And from someone who's been kind of the preacher about the offensive line over and over, the Dolphins had, let me see here, 7 different players who played between 30 and 60% of snaps on their offensive line last year. It is so important to develop some sort of consistency in this unit. Would that be your starting right guard?
Yeah, for me, see, that's where it becomes an interesting conversation because Mims only played right tackle at Georgia, but he has the body type to play guard. If you're going to draft him 21st overall, you're probably going to have him at least competing for one of the two guard spots, probably right guard. But the long-term thought is that he's going to be taken over at left tackle for Laremy Tunsil. Georgia was preparing him to play left tackle for him, for them before he ended up getting hurt again this past year. So I expect a lot of flexibility there with Amarius Mims. And just to piggyback on what you guys were saying too, it, you know, I had Mims going there at that spot. Josh had Leatu Latu, and you had Cooper DeJean. So many different options there, but I view them all three as premier prospects. And that to me is the reason why you probably may not want to trade down from pick 21 to pick 28 or 29 and just get another fourth round pick. You might as well get the premier prospect.
But the fourth round pick could be a good prospect. Why not risk it? One of my favorite things, especially draft season, is there's like a Family Guy clip, and I've actually mentioned it before, where Peter can choose between a boat and a mystery box. And Lois goes, Peter, let's take the boat. And Peter says, no, let's take the mystery box. It could have a boat inside of it. So it's so important to kind of lock down that sure thing. And that kind of seems like it's always been Chris Greer's MO, especially when he preaches about the best player available and trying to identify that draft board. So I do think we're kind of headed down the right trail here about the prospects the Dolphins are looking at. Both Josh and I fell into a very tough situation. I marched through the entire show Fallout on Amazon. A little gruesome, but if that's your type of thing, I highly suggest you watching it because, oh boy, Josh, I got to the second round here after taking a defensive player. And I'm like, it's time, right? We're going to draft some offensive line and we're going to bolster this unit. Pop my head out to the surface and there's nothing. Patrick Paul went 41. Frazier went 39. JPJ went 33. I was just kind of sitting there like, okie dokie, what do we do here? What is happening? So Josh, you kind of see the board. I don't want to say fall apart, but it felt like I got punched in the face and my entire plan was gone.
Yeah, I mean, same here. And you said punched in the plan. I thought you meant right, just punch, like, has it, yeah, I mean, it because you did. I mean, we all regretted, right? I was getting ready to maybe even start over because your brain's telling you the Dolphins need an offensive lineman. You know, you hear Kat talking about Amarius Mims, you're just thinking, damn, that's perfect there. So, yeah, I was sitting here in no man's land. Do you want me to say who I ended up going with? Because I'm going to be honest, man. I saw you tweet yours out, and I didn't want to piggyback you. So I tried to go a different direction. And, you know, again, I regret going this direction, I believe. But it's someone I think could come in and make an impact. Wide receiver Ricky Pearsall from Florida. I think he's a slot receiver. Caught 65, 87 balls last year, 963 touchdowns. That would be amazing, right? 963 touchdowns, 963 yards, and 4 touchdowns. And I think what's funny, I mean, this guy's out there. You already see him working out, right, with Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill and things like that. So I think he'd come right in. He'd fill that slot void that we need. Obviously, Jake, I still think we might need that big body target like you might talk about. But Ricky Pearsall was sitting there, and I thought, you know what, this guy is made for this offense. He can come right in and play. So that's the direction I went. But again, we were both regretting not taking an offensive lineman earlier in this draft or using that one trade up we had, right? I mean, we just stood put like goofballs, and we ended up not – well, I got an offensive lineman, but I'm not very happy with it.
So, Josh, yeah, I like what you had there with Latu and Pearsall. And, you know, Latu, somebody who had, you know, 13 sacks last year and – you know, 21 tackles for loss and Pearsall 4.41 speed can work in the slot too. And you're not paying him a bunch of money either.
The only thing, Josh, he was on my board too. I just wanted something. It was weird because something about taking a slot receiver in the second round, something they haven't done since Jarvis Landry is already making my point against me. But I went Jatavion Sanders just because I think we had the same mindset here. A pass catching option. Sanders, he's someone who averaged 15 yards per carry per reception last year. On top of that, 276 snaps at inline tight end, 432 snaps as a receiver. I figure give him the Butch Berry treatment. Let him have a shot at him, see if he can develop him into a blocker. Looking at this Miami Dolphins offense, and I might have fell far too far down this hole, but I look at how often the Dolphins targeted their wide receiver three, and they were among teams like the Rams and the 49ers who never targeted that position, that third wide receiver. But they did target the tight end. They did target the running backs. You got McCaffrey, you got Kittle. So that's kind of where my thought process started going, but as I kind of reflect on that, I see a team that's kind of trying to chase an image where if you're getting that tight end, if you're trying to produce that Rams or 49ers offense, you're already a step behind. I'm kind of open to the idea of having McDaniel get another speedster and say, all right, how can you break it one step further instead of doing what's already been successful? How can you be the guy that everyone's trying to copy again? We remember back the Tyreek Hill in motion from the tight end position. We saw everyone kind of jump on that. So instead of taking Jatavion Sanders, who I saw a mock draft where Miami picked him in the first round and I wanted to crawl over and die. That's how upset that made me. The Dolphins have never selected a first round tight end, and it won't happen this year unless it's Brock Bowers. But I think I fell into my own trap here of trying to just follow everyone's lead. The Dolphins need that tight end of the future. But overall, Josh, I think you might have convinced me. I think I'd rather lean in that Purcell camp as of now, we'll say.
You wonder what the Dolphins are thinking, though, right? I mean, I think we've heard rumblings that they were – you saw Mike McDaniel, big smile on his face at Texas Pro Day. Everyone's talking about it being Worthy or A.D. Mitchell, but it could have been Sanders all along. So I think the biggest fear, I guess, and a lot of people, I guess, say that he can't really block, so it makes you wonder if he's that next evolution of Mike Gesicki. But we want that big body target, right? Bringing Sanders to this offense could do similar things, you know, in a way that, you know, Pearsall was. I guess the thing that we got to continue to ask ourselves is how many more targets are there going to be to spread around, right? We know how much he loves Tyreek Hill. We know how much he loves Jalen Waddle. I mean, we all want that third target, but how much are they going to be utilized? So, yeah, man, Sanders, Pearsall, I think that's that next step in that offense. But, again, we still need that offensive lineman. But what'd you do, Kat? What are your thoughts on Sanders? And then tell us your pick.
Yeah, so Jatavion Sanders has a lot of pros and a lot of cons. The pros are that he didn't drop a pass this past year. And, you know, somebody who is also, you know, believe is only 20 years old, so has a bright, bright future. And gotten better as a blocker from you. On the other side, as far as the fit with the Dolphins, I look at the signing of Janu Smith and wonder if there's too much overlap between one another, because he's not a blocker. And are you drafting somebody here in the second round who is going to be the fourth or fifth option on your offense? That would be my only complaint with him. But he is a talented guy. And also, you know, a lot of people expected him to blow up the combine. He didn't. He ran a 4.7. He didn't run a 4.5. He didn't test out athletically well in a lot of areas. And tight end tends to be a position that takes a while for a raw player to develop into. So I'd probably pass on Sanders at 55, even though I do like the talent.
I kind of fell into a trap too, where I look at all the tight ends taken last year. What, you had Kincaid in the first, and then Laporta in the second, Mayer in the second, Musgrave in the second. I just kind of think that there's a might have been a little bit of a turning point with how tight ends are used in the NFL, where it's not all of a sudden, like, I think we were even saying when Mike Gesicki was taken in the second round of 2018, it's like, yeah, he might do some things his rookie year, but try to settle down. It's one of those positions you need a couple of years to develop. Maybe that's starting to turn a corner, but I completely see that argument. And it's super hard not to disagree with it. I think this is a scenario where if I had another mock draft, I would have done something different. And Kat, I think that's where you topped us both here, where you threw a punch here and you mixed up the draft order a little bit.
Well, so when you take a look at what Chris Greer has done in the last several drafts, I mean, really two historical examples of Chris Greer trading up in a situation like this is back in 2016, the Dolphins knew they were going to have comp picks for the following year. So they traded future picks, got a third rounder. So they got an extra, you know, pick in the third round. They took Leonte Carew, not the best, you know, pick at the time, but, and then in 2021, they traded from 55 up to 41, are in the 50s to the 40s to get Liam Eichenberg. Not the best selection at the time either, but they traded a future third rounder. So that's where this gets, that's where I took here in the second round, traded up from the 50s to the 40s, gave up next year's third rounder to take West Virginia center Zach Frazier. And to me, this is as close to Creed Humphrey as you can get, where he's a short area wrestler, 6'3", 314 pounds. And now you've got Amarius Mims and Zach Frazier, along with Aaron Brewer and Austin Jackson as your future of this offensive line, because otherwise we may be sitting here in a year saying Austin Jackson and Aaron Brewer are by far, in a best case scenario, the only two above average players on this offensive line. So if you get Mims and you get Frazier in here, I'm willing to sacrifice next year's third round pick to be able to do that.
I mean, I'm hard not to gush over that. I mean, I'm just sitting here just, you know, like in awe, right? I mean, we like our drafts. I'm happy with what I did, but we want that offensive line. We know how important that meat and potatoes are. So I have no problem giving up a third next season. You know, if we're going up there and getting a guy that he's and some other scouts are, you know, comparing to Creed Humphrey, because let's be honest. I mean, the Dolphins Twitter, you know, we're all over the place a little bit, but Creed Humphrey, that was a unanimous decision that a lot of Dolphin fans wanted and would have changed that offensive line. So, I love your two picks, Kat, and love that we're fixing the offensive line for now and the long term.
And the issue compared to, like, our picks, Josh, is, like, both of us with the receiver, tight end, we're already squinting, like, all right, well, this is their path to play. Like, how are they going to do this? When you're drafting two offensive linemen, you know right away you're going to step in, we're going to find a spot for you. Especially, I mean, just looking at how many different offensive line combinations the Dolphins had right here, it kind of feels like such a great way to rebuild the roster. Kat, how do you feel when you see that stretch from 55, well, you moved up, but how do you feel when you see that stretch all the way to about a pick 150 without having any picks? Do you feel you've accomplished your mission drafting two offensive linemen there?
You know, I wonder what the Dolphins are thinking as far as, and this may have been their strategy, where it's like, we like signing Jordan Poirier at safety. We like Kendall Fuller cornerback. We're not going to find those type of players in the draft. We're not going to find a center as athletic as Aaron Brewer in the draft. And we're going to find wide receivers somewhere else along the way. But as far as getting two future offensive linemen, that's where we need to do that in the first two rounds of the NFL draft. I hope that's their strategy when it comes to this. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want them to take the two best players on the board.
Let's go through the rest of our picks here. Kat, with your trade, you didn't include any of your, you still have four selections for the draft, right? This year?
Yeah.
Cool. So, all right, we're jumping all the way down to 158. I got really desperate because I haven't selected any offensive linemen yet. I know that's a super huge key for the Miami Dolphins. I jumped Missouri, Javon Foster, the tackle. That was my pick. Kat, I wanted to ask you, Zach Zeter, he didn't really feel like too much of a scheme fit for this team. Am I wrong thinking that? Or because that's kind of what pushed me in this direction.
No, you're definitely not wrong. He was a projected second, third round pick at right guard, but got hurt very late in the year. Mm-hmm. He should be okay to go next year, but there should be some recovery. But he is built very tall and built stiff. So you're not crazy in thinking that. If the Dolphins are looking for more of a flexible,
I think I just called it who Josh lineman. Picks.
Yeah, so
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. It was after I took him, I started actually reading up on him, and it's like he's not very athletic, and I'm like, oh well, you just F the pooch here. But yeah, I got desperate. I saw he was a team captain. I know he played at Michigan, started 12 games at right guard last year, like Kat said, broke his tibia and fibula, but was part of the best offensive line. So I just saw a guy that you could just throw out there and hope that, you know, could maybe play guard. But once I realized he wasn't very athletic and couldn't move well, I definitely regretted that one. So thank you, Jake. Thank you. Yes, I'm fired now. I'm out. They just fired me.
I'll say, for any Mel Kiper fans, though, Mel Kiper had Zach Zeter as a top 25 overall prospect as recent as November. So you're not talking about somebody who just, you know, this is a battle-tested, really good offensive lineman. Mm-hmm. For Michigan. I mean, this guy's no joke. So fifth round, I have zero problem with him, but I would like that pick too. The only reason I didn't take Zach Zeter, despite not a great, you know, scheme fit in this, is because I've already taken two offensive linemen in my mock draft.
Mm-hmm. Who'd you go with, Kat?
So I felt like we're going to stay in the trenches here. And The player I took was McKinley Jackson from Mississippi State. I was a little surprised to see him here, but he could go anywhere between the third and the fifth round area because, you know, athletically is a little bit limited. He's 6'1", 326 pounds, played the nose tackle position in college. And I mentioned on our show a couple weeks ago here that the two U's, the two words that I use are stocky and slippery, and that mm-hmm. defines him. But as far as athletically, you look at the top 15 defensive tackles in the draft, he's going to be at the bottom of the list in 40 time at about a 5'3". He's going to be at the bottom of the list in vertical jump at 23 inches. I mean, those are not good numbers, but he's a good football player. And I see him being at least a rosterable player, which is what you're looking for here in the middle of the fifth round.
Can I just say one thing, Jake?
Oh, yeah.
This is why I hate these mock drafts. Round 6, 198, I took McKinley Jackson. You, again, were on here hyping him up, praising him, talking about, you know, how this could be a guy that we could get later in the draft that could, you know, come in and make some noise. So, yeah, I took McKinley Jackson at 198. You gushed about him. I don't have to really say anything about him. But right there is proof as to why these mock drafts, the exact same thing, right? We have same settings and everything, and I got him, what, an entire round later? It's just
crazy,
absolutely wild, and proves how all over the place these things are.
Josh, I wish I actually planned that because it was hilarious. And I apologize. I just don't see the vision. You have that eye for talent that I don't. I picked Foster just because I thought he had some strong games against South Carolina, Florida, and Georgia. One sack allowed. It just seemed like, hey, good player, solid career. Why not let Barry get a hold of him and see what happens? Pick 184 in the sixth round. Cat, I've read so many good things about Grayson Murphy. 6'3". 260, 8 sacks last year, 21 quarterback hits. Why is this guy just sitting there in the sixth round?
Maybe because he has a twin brother that plays for the same team, and it's the same team as Leiatu Latu. So he's kind of the forgotten guy. I mean, he's the forgotten guy in his own family, it sounds like, because Gabriel Murphy is projected to go higher. But Grayson Murphy is somebody who is not quite as technically sound as his brother Gabriel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's still a talented player. And I think as an outside linebacker, so a pass rush guy, I was looking at both of the Murphy guys because both would make sense there on day three. So no, I think that'd be a really good pick. And going back to what you're saying about Foster, I'm a Mizzou fan, so I like the Foster pick at right tackle. He's been specifically a right tackle at Mizzou, which, so he doesn't have a lot of flexibility, but even with that, you know, you didn't hear his name much at Mizzou, which is a good thing as a right tackle. So I think those are two solid picks.
Yeah, looking at Murphy, it just seemed like looking at his traits and looking at his career, I wouldn't necessarily see it as a bad thing if, you know, the second or third week of the preseason, we see him like breaking into the rotation a little bit and making a name for himself. I kind of thought, like, I wouldn't be panicking about seeing him despite being a sixth round pick. That's the type of skill set I thought he had, where the ceiling might not be the highest, but you have a floor where, all right, he can come in, and if he has to play 10%, 12% of snaps, he could do enough with that. Josh, where are you looking?
Oh, man, I feel like such a, what is it, a noob, a poser for this pick? I don't know the words. In hindsight, I should have taken a quarterback here, and I hope people get mad at me for that. I don't care. I really wanted a late-round developmental quarterback. Didn't go that way. Oh, man, I'm embarrassed to even say this. Okay, guys, I took a punter, and I read up on him, and he's actually 27 years. He's actually 27 years old, so this dude's older than Jake Bailey. But, you know, I heard the rumblings all year about this Tory Taylor guy, Iowa. I mean, I already said it, right? I mean, was that a bad pick? I mean,
No. That's
all we had.
That's a good. And I'm sorry to cut. I'm sorry to cut you off there. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I don't have anything written down other than he broke the record.
Tony Pauline for Pro Football Network said that there's a good chance that he ends up going in day two. That's how much people think of him.
Wow.
So you're talking about if a guy projecting. I don't care what they paid Jake Bailey. They shouldn't have paid him anything. I was going to do that, with one of my later picks or Cam Little, the kicker from Arkansas. And, I didn't have the balls to do it. So I'm glad you did.
And a little history lesson. The Miami Dolphins selected a sixth round punter in 1999 by the name of Brent Bartholomew. People forget that. So Josh, you're kind of keeping with the traditions here with, you know what, it's time to get that punter in. I liked Jake Bailey the first year. Like, let's hang up, listen, let's see what he does coming back from the injury. I saw nothing last year that made me think like this should be the punter moving forward. So I'm all for, we see a Dolphins team. We haven't spoken about this. They signed a former special teams aide from the Giants. They signed Sirian Neal from the Buffalo Bills. So I see a team here that's really starting to focus on special teams, Josh. I wouldn't call it that crazy if we see a scenario develop where they're looking at a punter, and I wouldn't even be mad. I forgot his name. The special teams ace from the Giants was Cam Brown. So Josh, I mean, yeah, I think I'd take that pick in a heartbeat. I'm in.
Yeah, I've got back-to-back cornerbacks with my six-round picks here. So I actually wish I would have taken the punter or the kicker, honestly, if it were just what I was doing. But the two cornerbacks that I'm going with, number one, somebody who's kind of rising a little bit as people get more eyes on him, Kamal Haddon from Tennessee. He's 6'1", 196 pounds, a 3-year starter at Tennessee. Very good for zone-based coverages because of his length. So somebody like him, if the Dolphins can strike gold with somebody like him in the sixth round, you know, keep in mind they got Kader Kohu as a undrafted free agent, got Nick Needham as an undrafted free agent. If as a sixth rounder they can get him and get the flexibility then to move Jalen Ramsey around if this kid catches on quickly. And he has the experience as a 3-year starter to do so, then I think that would be big for the Dolphins. After that, A.J. Woods from Pittsburgh is somebody who was not invited to the combine. 5'11", 187 pounds, but runs a 4.440. And in a worst-case scenario with these defensive backs, you might be able to get gunners on special teams. And we saw that with, for example, Ethan Bonner last year, who ran a 4.38 coming out of Stanford. You know, these guys who have the physical skills and the ability to play on special teams in these gunner roles, I think are very well worth it in the sixth and seventh round.
Pick 198 is when things got a little interesting for me because, I mean, I didn't scour through every single player on the board, but I was thumbing through, and the name Jalen Sundel from North Dakota State, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, really stuck out to me because we've had different people on, specifically offensive line gurus in the last couple of weeks, Mark Schlereth, Brian Baldinger, and the concept that's happening along the NFL is you have the tackles, and eventually, in order to play in the NFL, some slide into guard, and then some eventually slide into center. Looking at you, Liam Eikenberg, what stuck out about Sundel and why I basically drafted him is he started his career as a center, and then in his senior year, he slid over to left tackle and played decently well. So that flexibility alone, I was like, all right, let's see what he can do at the next level. Even if he isn't going to be a left tackle at his 6'5", 300-pound frame, I see someone who could come in, and if it's a Robert Jones, a Lester Cotton scenario a few years down the road, you could be comfortable sliding him in just based on that experience.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. He's somebody that has been talked about a lot over the last month as a late round guy too, for that, those exact reasons. I mean, the positional versatility, the athleticism, the size, and then you're relying on your offensive line coach from that point to take care of the rest. I mean, and on game day, you know, it's important that you have players that can play several different line positions. So yeah, absolutely. I like that pick as well.
Josh, you already told who'd you pick again? I'm sorry.
I did not give him. We're in round seven, right? Are we in round seven? Are we
round
there?
Or am I thought this is the guy that.
McKinley Jackson. Yeah, McKinley Jackson was somehow still there. So, I mean, again, take these things with a grain of salt, but I ran to the podium.
Didn't even think twice. Seventh round. At this point, it's all darts. And I don't have too much of an explanation behind mine, and I don't think it really needs one. Frank Gore Jr. was just sitting at the top of the board. I'm like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Frank Gore's son, bring in another seventh-round running back for the Miami Dolphins. They absolutely love to take their darts on running backs in that scenario. Seeing someone like Frank Gore available, I know people might want to select him a little higher because of his name, but, I mean, seeing him there in the seventh round, I thought, yeah, absolutely no-brainer. Let's sign up for that, and he'll make an impact sometime down the road.
Yeah, I like it too. I mean, he didn't test out well athletically, but, you know, Frank Gore Jr., end of the seventh round. I mean, somebody who was really productive at Southern Mississippi. Don't really see how you can go wrong. And he plays faster than whatever he tested out at too. So I like that pick. And my seventh rounder was a wide receiver named David White from Western Carolina. And this guy's 6'2", 200 pounds. I haven't taken a wide receiver yet in this draft or offensive weapon of any kind here. Somebody who, when I watched, I thought was a really smooth route runner. And as 6'2", 200 pounds, you know, somebody that would make a lot of sense and could come in and potentially compete for the Dolphins at the bottom of the roster. He didn't have more than 400 yards receiving in college at any point in his career. But then again, I'm sorry if the mother of the Western Carolina quarterback is listening to the show, but I don't know who that is. So, you know, I would imagine that guy's not very good. So I think it is somebody that is going to get into an NFL camp and compete for a spot.
I think Jake said it best, right? We're throwing darts at this point. I mean, we kind of were, well, we got some good players in the last round, but I went the same way you did the previous round, Kat, and focused on the defensive backs. I went with the cornerback again, Penn State. I live in Pennsylvania, so I kind of kept it in, I guess, state. 5'9" slot cornerback, Daquan Hardy. He plays special teams. 4.38, has the speed there. I believe I saw fourth return yards all time in Penn State history or something like that. So he can, you know, maybe impact the return game. We know the rules are changing there. Maybe be a gunner on special teams. And then maybe can even, you know, find a way onto the roster. Perhaps, you know, I'm getting crazy here, but Kader Cohu's our, what, the starting nickel at this point. So who knows? Throwing a dart here. Daquan Hardy's the guy, 5'9", slot corner. What say you?
I really like that pick. And as we talk through this, I think I wouldn't be mad if they took Cooper DeJean at the top of the draft, but just kind of seeing some of these fifth, sixth, and seventh round cornerbacks, defensive backs you guys are talking about, it's another scenario where I don't really see it as a crazy development if they're making an impact in training camp. It means they played better than a veteran in Nick Needham. It means like they are hitting the ground running better than someone like Cam Smith, who has so much to prove in his second year. I think getting a defensive back in that sixth, seventh round opens up a path for them to see playing time. And I think that's very smart roster building instead of just taking hey, we got another guy for depth that we could use 2 years down the road. Seeing someone who, when you realize that even, you know, Jonathan Harrison, a name that's going to erase from all our minds down the road, played an impact, was snapping balls to Tua Tagovailoa when this Miami Dolphins offense needed points the most. Like, it really puts into perspective that there's going to be points throughout the season where everybody can hit the field, and having those guys who can take advantage of opportunities, man, that's really what you want.
Yeah, I agree. And day three of the draft is going to be flooded with cornerbacks. There's a lot of really good depth in the later rounds. I mean, just for example, just at Penn State, Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, and Daquan Hardy, three cornerbacks are going to be taken in day three. I can guarantee you that. So I like that pick. Daquan Hardy, kick return skills, 4.38 speed. And Josh and I are thinking really along the same lines there, where I went back-to-back cornerbacks in the sixth round for those very reasons. When you're big and when you have the physical profile and when you have the speed, then you should be able to find a spot, not only on the 53-man roster or 55-man roster, but on game day too.
Kat, I think you might have it open, but do you remember the last time the Dolphins selected a fifth round cornerback?
See here, fifth round corner. I know Rashad Jones was a fifth rounder. I know Chris Clemens was a fifth rounder. Nolan Carroll was a fifth rounder too. Hold on.
One hint. There were like three guys with the same last name on this team at the time.
Oh man, no, that still doesn't help. Was it in the last 10 years?
Yes.
Okay. Round corner.
He signed with Washington, I believe was his next.
Bobby McCain. Okay. Bobby McCain. Yep. From that was 2015. That was the same round Tony Lippitt was drafted in.
Yep. Josh, you want to take a shot at the last time they drafted a cornerback in the sixth round? Seventh round's easier. If you want to do seventh round, I think you could hit it out of the park.
I can't hit anyone. I'm blanking. I told you I hate when you do this. And I have the thing up, but I'm just not too, I'm too honest to pull it up. Go ahead. Kat has it on the tip of his tongue. Someone, I don't get no points for this.
I'll take a shot. I'll take a shot at this. Let's see. Sixth round.
I don't even know if they
Jordan,
ever played a
Jordan
snap.
Lucas.
Nope. Jordan Lucas was a safety.
Yeah, he was. All right. So yeah, he was drafted as a cornerback. But he flipped to safety quickly. Let's see. Hold on. All right. So cornerback, you're saying, right? It was in the last 5 years.
It was in the last 6 years.
6 years. Okay.
I don't think he played any snaps.
Man. Yeah, I'm thinking here now.
His first
I'm tapping out.
His first name's a college. His last name's a famous biker? Bicyclist? That's not right.
Dave Mira.
Cornell Armstrong.
Ah, Southern Mississippi.
And yep. He goes to college right off the top.
He's still in the league, believe it or not.
Is he really?
He is. He's not. He's he was with the Falcons and the Texans for a number of years. And he's still, I know he's still with the team. He's probably not going to make the roster, but I just saw him on a team just today. That's crazy. That shows the attributes that if a cornerback has those attributes, they can stay around the league for a long time. Cornell Armstrong.
What a great point.
Man, 7-8 years in the league now and never has really been good or really been, you know, he's done the best he can and he's probably made a couple million dollars in his career. Good for him.
So the last seventh round pick, this is a super easy one. It was over 10 years ago. Cat, do you already know it? We just talked about him recently.
Position?
Sorry, what'd you say?
What position? Seventh rounder?
Cornerback. And it speaks to your guys' point again that these late round cornerbacks can do some damage.
I see Jimmy Wilson.
That's it.
You're talking about? Okay.
2011. Jimmy Wilson.
2011, yep. Yep, one of the last picks in the draft. And was in jail for 2 years, too, and was let out for...
Crazy story. After you mentioned it last time, I went and looked it up a bit. If anyone out there listening, go read about the junk Jimmy Wilson had to go through in order to make it to the NFL. But I think all three of those names, Bobby McCain, Cornell Armstrong, and Jimmy Wilson, speak to the fact like these late round cornerbacks, the Dolphins might be onto something here. But I think that is it. Josh, do you have any final draft thoughts here? Did you learn anything from doing this exercise other than punter fifth round is a thumbs up move?
It's okay. Yeah. Yeah. That I'm not fired for that move. Yeah. I mean, I mean, I'm okay with, I think there's a bunch of different ways. I guess that's what I'm taking away from this, whether it was the way the board fell, whether it was the way we all had three unique classes, it's that there's a bunch of different ways for the Dolphins to make this roster better. Let's just hope Chris Greer doesn't screw it up. I guess that would be my only thoughts. What about you, Kat? You got anything else you want to say?
No, I think that's about it. And really just looking at the Dolphins at pick number 21, I think the major thing to look out for as draft day approaches is, are Bo Nix and Michael Penix going to be taken in the top 20 picks? Because, you know, and I've held out as long as I can saying that I don't think they're going to. They don't have the talent level to. They're good prospects, but I think they're second, third round guys. But there are so many teams drafting in the top 13 that, I mean, you're talking about like the Bears are taking Caleb Williams. The Commanders have Marcus Mariota. The Patriots have Jacoby Brissett at quarterback. The Vikings have Sam Darnold. The Broncos have Jarrett Stidham. The Raiders have Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew. Like,
people complain about Tua.
Yeah. and that's what,
holy show. Oh my God.
That's what it comes down to. It's like, can you, if you're the Broncos and you're the Vikings and you're these teams, can you generate interest on your team without drafting a quarterback and going in? What are you going to put on the programs every week? What are you going to market to your team saying, we're going to start Jarrett Stidham at quarterback or Sam Darnold? And, you know, it wouldn't make. So I think those two quarterbacks are going to end up going in the top 20. And thus, overall, you're going to have six quarterbacks go in the top 20 picks, which is going to shove a lot of value down to the Dolphins at 21. That's what I'm feeling right now, which is good news. Good news for Dolphins fans who are into the draft here at pick number 21.
I only wish they were a little higher up so they could have been one of those teams that's going to, like, sucker the Broncos into the biggest heist of all time for one of these, you know, the second wave of quarterbacks there after the top three or four guys. That, I mean, is the ideal scenario. And somehow the Dolphins were able to do that with a left tackle in the past. But I'm excited. I really don't think those other two quarterbacks are going to go that early. But if they do, I mean, it's going to be a field day for those teams in that area around 20, like the Miami Dolphins. But that is it. That's all we have today on Another Dolphins Podcast. early next week, I think Josh and I are going to come back and try to run through every single player who's visited with the Miami Dolphins so far ahead of the draft. Doesn't mean the Dolphins are interested in all these guys, and it doesn't mean that they're going to draft them, but it's an interesting, fun process nonetheless to get a vision of how they feel about the roster and the specific traits they're looking for. And then as we approach the draft starting up on Thursday, Kat, I think we're going to try to go live for when the Miami Dolphins are picking. We understand there's going to be a lot of different people going live saying, hey, let's talk about this pick. We will also release that on the podcast feed and on YouTube so that if you want to kind of get the thought process of what was happening during those picks, we hope you'll join us. And then, of course, we will be back to wrap up the rest of the draft as it happens. But thank you all so much for listening to an episode of Another Dolphins Podcast. We will talk to you next time. Until then,
fins up.